is Kenneth Wong, Senior Editor for DE247 and the host of this podcast series. Generative design, driven by AI and machine learning, is quickly becoming a regular feature of design and simulation software targeting engineers. But because of the speed with which things are evolving, we haven't had the chance to fully understand the legal implication. So today, we hope to get some clarity with the help of a legal expert. I have Grant Steyer, an IP lawyer. Grant, welcome. Would you mind introducing yourself and tell us about what you do normally?
Yes. Like you mentioned, Grant Steyer, I'm a patent attorney. Been doing this for about 10 to 15 years now, actually 15 years, and do a lot of work in what's called patent prosecution. And what that means is I work with companies, sole inventors, kind of everyone to write and file patent applications and then argue with the patent office to get that application issued as a patent. And I do work on utility applications, design applications. I do some work with trademarks as well. But, mostly it's that, kind of obtaining that IP kind of for my clients.
How do you see currently inventors, makers, engineers, designer, that sort of people? How do you see them using AI in their workflow? And do you see any problem with the current way in which they are using it?
So what I've seen kind of some good and some bad. A lot of the inventors now are using it for, or using generative AI to kind of come up with different ways that they're kind of, different embodiments, I would call them, for their invention, or to come up with ways to address particular problems with the invention. For example, if there's a client that is using pneumatics, compressed air, to deliver a sample. And there's some issue with kind of, changing the orientation, changing a direction. They can use generative AIs to kind of propose some different solutions to, for one aspect, of that, or a different type of pump to use, things like that, which is, good and helpful. It's the sort of thing that you would have done in the past by, Googling, going on Reddit, talking to a colleague. And trying to get the information, and generative AI is really good. It gives you a bunch of different answers that you can kind of go through quickly. Problem I've seen is that sometimes kind of assuming or believing kind of the output a little too much, where I've had inventors come to me with different embodiments, and I'm kind of reading through the write-up, and I can't figure out how, two or three of them are working of kind of the embodiments. And I go to the inventor to talk about it, and they'll even say, oh, yeah, that one I wasn't quite sure on, but, ChatGPT really was convinced. So I left it in there, and, it's something that basically breaks physics. it's not possible. So, that when inventors are using it more like you would kind of an assistant or an intern that is giving you some good work, but doesn't have a lot of experience. So you're not quite trusting everything they give you, that you can, kind of use it as a first draft that you're kind of going back to, that you can validate things and kind of move forward from there. That's kind of the real positive I've seen with kind of some of the generative AI.
So a number of the CAD software, simulation software companies that we regularly write about, Autodesk, SolidWorks, for example, they have introduced many of the features in their design software where you can use natural language prompt, whether it's just text prompt or voice command, to generate certain geometric shape or even design that you would want. And that raises the questions about, in patent applications, there is a clause about significant contribution by a particular human. Does this AI trend with natural language prompt design, anything, does it put this natural, this significant human contribution clause in jeopardy? What are the impacts of this?
I think it was February of 24 was kind of some of the first, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO, put out some guidelines for determining inventorship for when, AI is involved, in the inventorship. Geez, 4 days ago, they put out new ones on November, I think it was the 28th, right around Thanksgiving there, gave out some, updated guidelines. And I think it's kind of helpful in the way that basically the guidelines are, the human has to conceive of the invention. They have to have like, some creative contribution. That has to be kind of the if the all the key features were come up with by the AI, then that's a problem. But assuming it's not that kind of weird situation, then normally the AI, patent office is just treating it as a tool. You have to be a human being to be an inventor. There was the US and a bunch of other countries have had some of these cases go forward where basically people were trying to push the issue of, does it have to be a human or could it be a machine? We had similar cases for copyrights where they would basically give a monkey a camera and have it take a picture, and then people were trying to see if they could get that copyrighted. And the same thing was happening with patent applications where they were purposefully trying to have all the inventiveness done by an AI. And then file a patent application on this, say that there was no human involved to kind of get the case, get the issue pushed forward. So those are kind of more of the outliers. And the more of like what the guidelines are actually focusing on is like, if me or you is looking, is we're trying to solve some problem and we have a general idea of one way we could do it, but we're kind of stuck and we're using it more like we'd go on Reddit or we'd call a colleague, you'd research it, it's kind of that level. If I find a kind of a solution to a problem on Wikipedia that, oh, there's this sort of, peristaltic pump I could be using, I wouldn't consider Wikipedia, to be an inventor there. It was a tool I used. And the patent office is saying the same thing, to kind of simplify it down there that, as long as the humans kind of involved there, then, we're okay. So the AI is only really a problem when, there was really no kind of human, the human didn't do any of those kind of key features there that, they were really kind of out of the loop. Then that's the problem where you might actually not have, a true inventor there. But that's based on current, kind of the current models that are out there. That's not something I'm kind of seeing or coming across oftenly as of right now. But that's kind of the fears. If eventually we got to that point, then yes, you may have a problem with inventorship. But that'd be kind of the. That would be the example there that where you'd have a problem. But for most cases, it's just a tool that the human was using.
The way currently in the design software it works with AI tools is that, of course, AI have to rely on existing data. So that involves a lot of machine learning and using a data set to train the AI to understand what certain type of pumps are supposed to do and what engines are supposed to look like and things like that. One of the safeguards that some of the leading software in, developers have told us they have implemented is that if the AI spit out something that looks too much or identical to something that is already in existence in the training data set, the AI is instructed to discard that. Is that a good safeguard? Is that enough? What are your thoughts on that approach? What are your thoughts on that approach?
Yeah, because part of the problem is that there's basically two main issues with kind of the generative AI in that sort of situation. And one is that you accidentally infringe someone else's patent without meaning to. That, I go to AutoCAD or SolidWorks and say, hey, I need this part. And work through natural language. And because, let's say there's a patented part that's in this library, the data set that the generative AI was trained on, and that what is output to me is something that infringes someone else's patent, and that I'm not knowingly kind of infringing. That's kind of the one of the first issues that I could see is that if you have enough patented parts in this training data set, that could definitely be problematic. So that's kind of when you're unknowingly kind of infringing someone else's patent. Now, the other side of that, the other way is that if you have a patent, you maybe have all these, I would call them innocent infringers, these people that are being handed this kind of infringing device that was kind of output by, the CAD software. And as a business owner, it's going to be annoying to have to play whack-a-mole where I keep having to, send cease and desist letters or, whatever it is to kind of get to go after these people that are, not on purpose, that are kind of infringing my patent. So that's definitely kind of a real issue there. I'm not sure how good, without you could, as far as like the training data set and whether or not comparing it to how close it is, if that's kind of good enough. You know, there are all kinds of designs that you're allowed to copy out there, you know, that have been out for a long time. They're not protected by patents or copyrights. And so it's not always bad that, or, you know, they could be open source. You're allowed to copy them. So it's not always a bad thing if the you know, the output CAD file is too close to something that exists. And just kind of also kind of what is kind of too close, you know, kind of making that determination, you know, if the entirety of the CAD software is outputting is a car, and the only there's a patented, I'm picturing like a spoiler, you know, on the back of the car, if that's the only patented part, and it outputs, you know, a different car but has that patented spoiler on the back of it, that's a really, you know, different design from the point of view of the generative AI, but it is using this patented aspect. So in that case, I wouldn't think that the software would necessarily identify those as very similar. So I'm not sure kind of how helpful that will actually be. I could see there kind of being issues. I mean, you have to put some safeguards in place. So for these companies, you know, I see this as kind of a good kind of first step there. But there may need to be some things going on, like I've seen with you know, the copyrighted works that you're seeing for newspapers. A lot of these generative AIs are paying licenses to these companies to kind of input their data into the systems, and it may be that this is the way these, you know, the designers of these you know, CAD files, maybe this is the way they're compensated, that they're, you know, either open source and being put in there, or they're being paid a license fee for them to be in there. You know, maybe that's kind of the way it ultimately works out, because, you know, it just seems kind of, it can be very difficult to kind of have these software checks that kind of are good enough at looking for potential infringement and those sorts of things.
What would be your tips for engineers and designers who are not used to using generative design or AI tools and they are starting to delve into it and they may eventually get to the point where they need to submit a patent? What are your advice or common ways to avoid common pitfalls?
Yeah, one thing, and I kind of mentioned this earlier, is kind of having a human in the loop there, using the generative AI that, you know, to kind of walk as a almost like a coworker, a tool, something that you're going back and forth with. You're not asking the generative AI to output a completed design based on a problem statement without kind of a solution involved. Or if you're asking for example solutions, you're gonna kind of pick one of these solutions and you're gonna kind of go down and fine-tune it and kind of work through different aspects of it. The main issue I've seen is when people trust too much what is put output by the generative AI, because one, often there's normally problems with it that they might not be aware of. For example, if it's something that's going to be a molded part that, you know, it's something you couldn't injection mold. You know, it's just, you know, it's made in such a way that it's impossible to do that. You know, with kind of all the hallucinations we see with these generative AIs, for example, asking it to, you know, cite to different parts of a patent, you know, it kind of makes up citations all the time. You know, and if it's having trouble with that, you know, it's hard for me to believe there aren't going to be other issues there. And from what I've seen, you know, there's normally kind of issues there. So treating it as, you know, kind of something that you're iterating and going through and kind of not trusting the output and kind of verifying these sorts of things, that would be kind of one kind of big step. But also using the generative AI to kind of supplement your skill sets for doing things kind of more quickly than you may have been able to do, but that you're kind of still in the driver's seat. You know, and this wouldn't be kind of for generating kind of a design, but even for things like, you know, doing research or pulling citations or you know, different things like this, that's hard for a human to do that AI can do well, that you can then go forward and work through. You know, those sorts of things are definitely helpful. But also for, you know, if you are using the generative AI for, you know, inventing, you know, keeping a record, keeping a log, keeping notes of kind of how you've used the AI, and, you know, what you're using the AI for can be helpful for kind of proving inventorship. Most of these generative AI tools, they keep a log of kind of these prompts, the back and forth with the generative AI. So kind of outputting that, storing it somewhere, if need be, that would be helpful, if you ever wanted to kind of prove it. Look, this was my idea. This wasn't something where I just relied on the generative AI to kind of come up with. All of those sorts of things would definitely be helpful. And just remembering to turn on all of the kind of privacy, keeping your data yours, that's something that most of these tools are very good at now, especially once you get into kind of the paid subscription part of these, that you can keep your data private. And there's options for, if you work for a bigger company where they have they have their own kind of sandboxed version that where none of their data is exposed to the rest of the internet, those sorts of things, so that if you are working on something that you're all your designs aren't kind of leaked out, unintentionally, but it kind of made aware and available to everybody. So kind of making sure kind of all of those privacy things are turned on kind of within the tools themselves, just to kind of keep your data and your work private, as much as possible.
Thank you very much for clarifying some of those things for us. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Happy to help.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is all for this episode. Until next time, I'm Kenneth Wong, Senior Editor for DE 24/7, and we are signing out.